Yudhamanyu Prabhu Seva Vikram. He spoke something about Srila Gurudev this morning. I'll say a little something now. Paramananda Prabhu can say something, because we are here in Thailand, and this country was blessed with the lotus feet of Srila Gurudev. It seems almost like a dream that he came here more than a few times, and he really liked it here also. It was sort of a, in one sense, why should we be surprised? But to the degree that Srila Gurudev liked Thailand and the Thai people and the mood, and it brought some relief to all of those who love him and wanted him to be happy, even in his final time when his health was not good. He got some happiness and relief by coming here. And his outings, going to the fruit market or to this place or that place, and some of that was recorded by Satchasundara Prabhu. And being the true artist that he is, he's like on a deadline. He's working on the video right now as we speak. And when it's done, he'll jump on his motorcycle and drive over here, and we may get to see something like that. But when we think of his divine grace, Om Vishnupad, Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Satara Satasri Srimad Srila Bhakti Sundar Govindadev Goswami Maharaj, we think of his unique qualities and also of his relationship, his loving relationship with, naturally with his disciples, but with Srila Guru Maharaj and with Srila Prabhupada, Srila Swami Maharaj, and really with so many people that he met. You can meet people who are not ostensibly directly connected to the mission, who may have known him in Calcutta or some other place, and they have, you can't help but acknowledge that they have some type of extraordinary love and affection for him by interacting with him. And we saw this by traveling with him around the world, even, and sometimes instant appreciation. I remember being at the airport somewhere, and you're going through the scanner, the scanning agents. It was in some European country, and the scanner people, they come up to me and they're like, "Who is he? And what is his..." They're smiling just by observing him, his divine movements, the way he goes with his cane, his famous lati, they call it. It means stick. Basically, it translates as stick in Bengali, but it was a cane. And this gives you a hint of his personality, that many times followers, devotees or others, they would have some cane carved, hand-carved, silver handle, and they would present it to him. And Srila Gurudev, ever the gentleman, he would receive that, touch it to his head, accept it, but it would be put on in his room somewhere. Whereas what he prided himself on was a 15, or was it 17 rupee cane that he bought in Puri many years ago. That means, how should we say it? Well, that would be an American money. It would be around a quarter. I don't know what it would be in rubles or Thai money, but very cheap. And this little cheap, that was his cane. And with that, he'd gone on 22 times around the world. 22 world tours. And so sometimes he'd show me, he'd say, "Maharaj, you see my cane?" And he said, "Originally it was this much longer, but by going around the world and all these tours, I mean, you know, it's worn down that much. But no silver cane, or no cane with a silver handle, a golden handle, jewels, could get him away from his natural simplicity, just his little 15 rupee cane from Jagannath Puri. And so that means this, in his own expression, simple-hearted devotee. He would use that in different ways. In this regard, another regard, he was an example of that. And we're told by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where it mentions, 26 qualities of a pure devotee. He's out delineating what sort of qualities we'll observe in a pure Vaishnava. This one comes to mind, which is in Bangla and Sanskrit called Sharal, means simple or simple-hearted. And this reminds me as well of, because Gurudev will say, I'm a village boy from Bamanpar. But what is Bamanpar, this name? It's a, what do you call it? I forget the word. The only other word I can think of is not, doesn't sound polite. But I mean, this, it's been modified in time. So the original name would have been Brahmanpur. And what does that mean? Pur, like Puri. It means a city of Brahmins. What is the speciality of this town? Is that everyone here is a Brahmin. It means they're in the highest section of Vedic society. What do Brahmins do? They interpret scriptures, they give medical advice, and astrological consultation. Although we don't think of Gurudev fitting the stereotypical concept of a Brahmin, what was his expertise? Scriptural interpretation, medical advice, and astrological calculation. So he's a Brahmin to the core, actually. But the most friendly and accessible and loving, affectionate Brahmin you could imagine. Because we might think of them as being like, oh, they're a very detached group, they're very inclined towards spiritual practices, rituals, etc. But he didn't have that kind of stereotypical Brahminical persona, but he's a Brahmin to the core. Sometimes he told me when he was a baby, like this little baby over here, well, maybe a little older than that. How old is this baby?
3 months.
3 months. Okay, a little older than that. Maybe like a toddler, 2 years or something. He would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. He had this habit his whole life. 3 o'clock in the morning, he's up. Even if he's going to rest later, even in the final years, he's up. If you want to check at 3 o'clock in the morning, go to Govinda Maharaj's room, go to his room, you'll see that he's awake. So he did this his whole life. So he said when he was a toddler, he'd wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and then go and look at his mom and dad, mother and father, and the mother would be sleeping and his father would be awake and he'd go like, and he would climb up and he'd climb onto his father's chest and like want to play. So what would his father do? His father's a Brahmin guru. Start teaching him Vedic mantras. Sorry, like, here's the Satya Yuga mantra. And then start speaking that. Here's the Treta Yuga mantra. Here, and that's how he kept him occupied, is by training him with to memorize Sanskrit mantras. So even though he's a little child, he's learning all these things. And he would say when his father would be invited to perform religious functions, because he's a Brahmin priest, and they go there and they sing the songs and all that stuff. So the way that you sort of pay Brahmins, is with pranami. But sometimes pranami is actual money, other times pranami is puris, like the bread, puris, the deep fried. So Gurudev said, sometimes, describing what his life was like, he said, we had so many puris from doing programs that we used puris like firewood. So if we needed to build a fire, we'd put a bunch of dried puris in the fire, like throw some ghee on them and light it up. You know, that's how we cooked. So, what his life was like there, we can't tell all the stories about his pastimes as a young student and different things. But I remember once, like here, we're hearing here in Chiang Mai, living here, we're hearing regularly the sound of the kokio, right? Which is this bird that occupies a place in the poetry of the Goswamis, in the pastimes of Krishna, you know, like kujat kokila hangsa sarasagana, kirne mayura kule, the famous song of Srinivasacharya about Vrindavan, saying kujat ko, that means the sound of the kokil, the hangsa, the swan, mayur, the peacock. He's saying, what are the divine sounds of Vrindavan? So here in Chiang Mai, and actually all over Thailand, but really here, we hear the kokils all the time. And what is the kokil? The bird that sounds something like this. Don't make me laugh. Because then I can't do it. They sound like this. Not a very good, but yeah. You know. You hear them in the morning, right? So that's the sound of the kokil. So Gurudev, hearing that sound, sometimes in a very ordinary situation, that might bring about some divine remembrance to him. So in Navadvip, as I say, here, they're here year-round. But in Navadvip, they come as announcing springtime. When the kokil comes, you can understand. It's like Saraswati Puja, what's the other thing? Makara Sankranti. The things are changing and we're going towards springtime. Now, Gurudev would say, oh, that reminds me of my childhood. And he said that before we had a clock or even a watch. I mean, so when he grew up, there's no clock on the wall to tell you what time it is, and no one has a watch in Bamanpar. So how do you know? We can't imagine living without, you know, every mobile phone, every computer is constantly telling you what time it is. And if you go and buy something, the receipt says, you bought this at 9:28 a.m. But here he said, the way we tell what time it is by the stars in the sky, the position of the stars, the moon, and the sound of birds. When birds start making a certain sound, we know, oh. And he would say, we might say, oh, then you have to get up in the morning? Like here, we hear roosters crow in the morning, and we also hear birds, and I know when I hear that, oh, it's getting close to the Brahma Muhurta, whatever time. But Gurudev, he said, when I would hear the sound of the kokil or different birds, he said, then I knew it was time to get up and eat muri. Mm-hmm. Not just to get up, but to get up and eat muri. Now, what is muri, someone might say? Or for the muri challenged, I will explain. It means puffed rice. So, and it's a specialty in India, but particularly Bengal. There's a way, I don't know how you do it. Gopal knows how to do it, other people. But so this puffed rice, it's like Bengali comfort food, you can say. So Gurudev, he's always saying, one of his things, sometimes even people will come and they're asking him something very serious. And he's saying, you are wanting to know what you should do in your life. He's saying, but I am wondering, what should I eat? So then people start suggesting, well, Maharaj, you could have this, you could have that. But usually if nothing sounded like what he wanted to do, you say, Muri, you could have Muri. I'm like, yes. And they bring some puffed, the Muri, and he puts in a little mustard oil and stirs it around a particular way and eats that. And also he has a particular way of eating it that it looks like it's ice cream. The way he's licking the spoon, and you just think like, God, I wish I had some of that. So once he's doing that in Navadvip, that, you know, with this, and he also knows how to tease people too. And he's like, and I'm going, and he's going, Maharaj, you want? And I'm going, yeah, like sign me up. I want some of that. But I don't know exactly what he's eating or how he's eating that Muri. So then I find out it's not only Muri, there's the puffed rice, but then they're putting in some gur, date gur, like this sweet substance, was like molasses, but then they're adding mustard oil. And so when I get this, now I'm taking it, but I go like, and he's smiling and laughing. It's good? Now you're eating what I'm eating. You like it? And they're like, yes, it's very good. You know what I mean? How am I going to finish them? And when he was a new member of the Mott, some Mott devotee was not treating him properly. Sometimes Guru Maharaj would say, if you're going to live in an ashram, you have to be ready for dal and gal. And like, dal's the cheapest food available, and gal, I can translate as like the lowest person is going to be your boss. So he said, so this is going to create some ego problem, or then you're going to have to tolerate this if you're going to survive in an ashram. So when he is there, it's mango season, which is a time of great joy in India. Because unlike here where they have one mango, maybe they have two. Is it two or one? Looks like one, pretty much. All right, few. In India, they have like 100 different types. And they're all extraordinary, and they're really different. And so it's mango season, a time for great joy for the devotees. But this Mott member, who's like his superior there, he's giving him rotten mangoes. So they're eating like, but when it comes time, he's giving him rotten mangoes. So Gurudev, he's like 17, 18 years old. He's saying, why is this? Giving me rotten mangoes. What is this? So he starts climbing trees. He knows that from his village life, how to climb a tree. He's picking good mangoes right off the tree and eating them. And so that Mott member tells him, no, you can't do this. The system in the ashram is that the mangoes are taken and they're offered for the pleasure of the deity. They're given to Guru, for Guru, Gauranga, Radha, Govinda. And then the prasad you're taking. So you can't do this. So that Mott member wants to get him in trouble. So he tells Guru Maharaj, that young boy, Gorindu Brahmachari, he's stealing mangoes, directly. He's climbing trees and taking mangoes and eating them. So then Guru Maharaj has to call him in to like chastise him. You know, and Gurudev's like, this young boy, and Guru Maharaj is explaining, see here, everything has to be given to the deity first. And this is our system. He's, yes, but he's giving me rotten mangoes. And then Guru Maharaj said, because Guru Maharaj has so much love for Gurudev, sometimes they almost thought it was like to a fault, as we say. Loved him so intensely and also had big plans for him in the future. Guru Maharaj said, you see under my bed? And he looked and he saw, they're all the like really good mangoes are there. And Guru Maharaj said, anytime you want mangoes, you just come to me. And then Guru Maharaj took out these really beautiful, sweet, juicy mangoes and gave them to Gurudev. But for Gurudev, it's not enough to just like now relish those mangoes. He goes downstairs and finds that Mott member who's, and he's sitting there going, Oh, these are good. Given to me by Guru Maharaj. No. So anyway, one time in the mat, we're hearing the sound of the kokil, and Gurudev is saying, oh, that reminds me of my childhood. But as I said, it's also mentioned in the Goswami literature, because the kokil, the sound of the kokil is very like a type of liquid sweetness. And Gurudev said, you see, it's two kokils competing for the affection of a female. So one makes a sweet sound, and then the other one saying, no, my sound is sweeter, and then makes the sound sweeter, then and they go back and forth. And that's why if you listen carefully, you hear it, it goes up and up, it gets higher, 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 and then it sort of goes down, and they do it again. So they're trying to get the affection of the female. That's what's going on in that plane. But in the Goswami literature, they're mentioning that this liquid sweetness of the sound of the kokil is reminiscent, causes one to remember the sweetness of the voice of Krishna. It just gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. So if the higher devotees will hear the sound of the kokil, it will bring about intense remembrance of Krishna. So Gurudev says, after saying, oh, it reminds me of my childhood, this, that, and the other thing, then I see his mood subtly changes and becomes very deep and grave and reflective. And he says, he starts quoting the poetry of Rupa Goswami, and I have not committed this verse to memory, but it's something along the lines of Kurvati kila kokila iti jalpati bishadam iti jaimini iti jaimini, something like that, jalpati bishadam. And what this is now he's talking about the poetry of Rupa Goswami, and he says, and he's become very grave, and he says, in this verse, Rupa Goswami is voicing the sentiments of Srimati Radharani. And this is called Viruta Alankar, means the poetic expression of opposites or things that seem to contradict one another. So remember, this sound is taken to be very sweet and very joy-inducing as it reminds one of the voice of Krishna. But here, in separation from Krishna, Radharani is saying, she hears the sound of the kokil, and she's going, Jaimini, Jaimini. She's taking the name of Jaimini Rishi. Then Gurudev explains, why? It is the habit of the people of Vrindavan, if they fear, like we're waiting for the rain, if there's thunder and lightning, we don't want to be struck by lightning, right? So when there is the chance of being struck by thunderbolt, they say, if you will take the name of Jaimini Rishi, you'll be saved, you'll be protected. It says, but here, what Rupa Goswami is saying in this sloka is the sweet sound, the increasingly sweet sound of the kokil in separation from Krishna is like a thunderbolt striking the heart of Srimati Radharani. So she's saying, Jaimini, Jaimini. She's taking the name of Jaimini Rishi to protect her heart from the thunderbolt sweetness of the sound of the kokil, reminding her of the voice of Krishna. That comes out of the heart of Srila Gurudev when he hears the sound of the kokil, and many ordinary things are going on, and he can acknowledge, oh, in my childhood this or that, but if the sentiment is allowed to develop, it goes deep into his heart And then this sort of expression would come out. So, and we know he's famous for his sense of humor. But, and Srila Swami Maharaj Prabhupada said in one letter, when he wrote a humorous story, he loved it so much, he said, you know, people, they can't hear straight philosophy. He said, this thing called Choler Pate, it's a story he wrote. He said, but the way you've told this story, it's humorous, it's very funny, anyone will like it, and it makes some profound philosophical point. He said, so I see a great future for you as a, like a spiritual, a transcendental humorist in the future. Did he think this is the kind of thing that people could appreciate? So, and my own observations of this, we know, like recently Bhakti Lalita deity was here, and she is his secretary for so many years and on his veranda crew, and she adds certain dietary considerations. So she knows, and we all know this who come before him, if Gurudev, this kind of simple, childish, naivete, innocence, if you walk in front of him with a bag, he has to know what's inside of it. He'll ask you. And then you have to like open up your bag and show him. He has no, what's the word, about not compulsion, the opposite of, anyway, you know, I forget what that word is, but it means, you know, he won't hesitate to ask. So since she's with him all the time, she knows that whenever she walks in front of him, she has to show him what she has. So especially, maybe she's getting ready for lunch and makes some kind of salad or something like that. So she would like parade in front of Gurudev and almost like, and adjust, you know, show him everything, and he'll like, see what she has, and then like, okay, you know, and then she can go. So this one particular day, she stops and shows him, and it's like different type of lettuce and green things and, you know, that kind of stuff. And Gurudev looks, he goes, oh, I can see that your Lord is Krishna. And then she looked at me. The way he said, oh, I can see your Lord is Krishna. All right. And so, well, Krishna, he's Govinda. That means he herds the cows. Right? Krishna's always surrounded by cows. So what he's saying, when he looked at all this, all these green things, he's saying, this looks like cow food to me. Right? But rather than say that, he said, oh, I can see your Lord is Krishna. And that's a hint of what Prabhupada was talking about. So simultaneously, we could say on one level, this is a little bit of a loving insult, like a little tease. And he's making some he's being funny and humorous, but he's stating a truth. So who can do this? Who can be that clever? When I had the privilege to read a little bit of something written by Raghunath Das Goswami, and it's this clever repartee between Krishna and the Braja Gopis, just increasingly clever comebacks to one another. Krishna will say something, they'll say something. And there are many levels of interpretation, double meanings, puns, you know. They'll say things like, you are the acharya of despicable behavior. You know, or they'll say something, how Krishna, he's meant to say, some sloka, how Krishna's the savior of everyone. But they'll change one letter they'll take the last letter of one word and make it become the first letter of the next word, and then the whole meaning changes and then turns into some kind of a tease, a loving insult. So when I was reading this, I thought, where have I heard this kind of a thing or this ability? And I thought, oh, Srila Gurudev, Srila Govindaraj, he has this ability. then I thought, oh, then that means he's qualified to participate in their world. Like, that's unthinkable to us, but I could understand. You can only enter there out of a service necessity. And we'll think, well, what's all this cleverness about? Right? Service means when you're doing this or you're doing that. But we'll see, in that realm, if someone can provide some sort of thing that's humorous, it's a very clever use of language, metaphor, pun, double entendre, that produces some joy to all the hearers, and at the same time has as its basis some profound philosophical conclusion, well, that's what's going on with Krishna and the Vrajagopis. So then I thought, that means he's qualified to enter that plane and render that kind of seva. So that's one indication. And something Yudhamani Prabhu said once to me, reminds me of this, about where he said, don't give certificate to go. So we're not here giving him certificate. No way, shape, or form. We're here identifying some of his divine qualities for our own edification and trying, however poorly, to praise him. But we're not sitting here saying, well, you know, we're certifying why he's so extraordinary. His certification comes from Srila Guru Maharaj himself and all the god brothers of Guru Maharaj. That's why in the Pranam Mantram, written by Guru Maharaj, the first line, Gurva Bhista Supur Purakam Guru Ganai Ashisha Shambhushitam. He's saying, beyond totally pleasing me, Guru Maharaj, his guru, he's saying, the Guru Ganai, Guru Gan means, and the group of gurus, that means Guru Maharaj is saying, my god brothers, they're all gurus too. So not only has he fulfilled every desire of his own guru, all my god brothers who are also gurus, the Guru Gan, Guru Ganai, Ashisha Shambhushitam. Ashish means blessings. Sambhushita means he's fully ornamented with all the blessings of my god brothers. One by one, they'll all tell of the extraordinary qualifications of Srila Gurudev. Srila Keshava Maharaj saying, whatever he wills must happen. What we who have so many resources, men, finances, what we are unable to do, he can do with his intelligence. As we told Srila Prabhupada, saying, oh, now Sridhar Maharaj has a competent assistant. Because everyone knows Guru Maharaj by nature is a philosopher and a recluse, tending towards Nirjan Bhajan. When he got Gurudev, Prabhupada said, now he's got someone who's going to like take it out and do something. But Guru Maharaj has unparalleled wealth, but who's going to distribute it? There's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He is everything to us, but we need a Saraswati Thakur to reveal the wealth of Bhaktivinoda Thakur to the world. So in Guru Maharaj, he has an unparalleled treasury of Bhakti Siddhanta, Sindhu, and all that. Right? But who's going to distribute it all? So when he got Srila Gurudev, he's the agent for what Guru Maharaj conceived on, as I've sometimes called, the conceptual architecture of Chaitanya Saraswata Mat. And Srimad Chaitanya Saraswata Matabara Udgita Kirtir Jayasvin Bibrat Sambati Ganga Tata Nikata Navadipa Koladi Raje Yatrashi Gora Saraswata Nirata Gora Gata Grananti Nityam Rupa Nuga Shri Kritamati Guru Gauranga Radha Jitasa. When Guru Maharaj went in that thatched hut on the Rath Yatra day and put the giant bamboo pole with the red flag on the top, saying, this flag is announcing to the world the Chaitanya Saraswat Mat, its mission, what is it? To glorify Radharani, to spread the glories of Radharani around the world, which is the purpose of the descent of Mahaprabhu and the line of Sri Rupa, to talk about Gauragata Granthi, Nityam Rupa Nugasri, all of this, Sri Radhika Madhavasham. That's there. But who's going to translate this into action, something actionable? How is it going to manifest? It manifests under the divine guidance and direction of Srila Bhakti Sundar Govindadev Goswami Maharaj. That's how the world came to know how great Srila Guru Maharaj is. That's how all of us got some opportunity to interact with Srila Guru Maharaj. It was always Srila Gurudev bringing the devotees in connection with the lotus feet of Srila Guru Maharaj, because Srila Guru Maharaj is very shy, back-pushing man, living in seclusion. And Gurudev, sweetly, irresistibly appealing to him with his heart, that you give their mercy, your mercy to them. They want connection with your lotus feet. And Srila Guru Maharaj would say, when he would relent, he'd say, all right, but you must take care of them. They can have connection with me, but you'll take care of everyone. And that's really how Chaitanya Saraswat Math sprung out of the soil in Navadvip and then became so exalted all over the world. And Srila Gurudev taking that flag and circling the globe something like 22 times, I forget the number, 22 times around the world and keeping its dignity. When we were with him in Geneva, in Switzerland, he was invited by to go to this Ramakrishna mission place. And the man there, the leader there, was someone who, he's supposed to be introducing Gurudev, and he does a big introduction of himself. He's saying, I am the only Swami in Switzerland. I have a PhD. I am this, I am that. And he went, and he goes, and now here's, you know, Bhakti Sundar Govinda Maharaj. So then Gurudev starts speaking very humbly, and he's saying, I'm not so qualified. He has a PhD. He's a doctor. All the things the man said about himself, Gurudev said, I have no such qualifications. I'm just a village boy from Bamanpar, a small little village. And Ben, you know, he's like playing it down, down, down. He said, but my Guru Maharaj, he was qualified. And by the grace of my Guru Maharaj, something I got from him, even though I have no qualifications. You know. And then he like quoted one Sanskrit verse, and like a long one, and one that's very like deep and involved. And that man kind of like looked over. And then Gurudev, and but despite my lack of qualifications, my Guru Maharaj also, then he like quoted another one, you know what I mean? And then he quoted like 15, 20, 25 of these very intricate Sanskrit verses. And each time he did it, that man's head like went, till it was like, and so his head's like that, and Gurudev saying, I'm not so qualified as our honorable host, you know. And he totally defeated that man. But in a sweet way, while all along, highlighting his qualifications and saying he was totally unqualified. How do you do that? That's some type of genius. And he's saying, he's so qualified, I have no qualifications. And he's going down and going up like that. And you could say, oh, well, is there some ego there, some arrogance? No. He sees himself, what is the identity of Govindadev Goswami? He is the president, Saivite Acharya of the Math of Srila Maharaj. The Saivite, he always made sure, I am the servitor of Srila Guru Maharaj. His expansion of the worldwide Chaitanya Saraswat Math was meant to promote the glory of Srila Guru Maharaj. Why was he so kind to us and generous and forgiving? Because we on some level promoted the glories of Guru Maharaj. And if you did that, in his own words, he said, if someone like contributes to the seva of Guru Maharaj, he said, I become their slave. And we would be like, Maharaj, please don't say these things. Or sometimes devotees would come and say, some particular devotee has done wrong. You should oust him from our mission. And Guru didn't say, no. He served Srila Guru Maharaj at the time of the greatest necessity. Not only will I never oust him, I will follow that servitor through hell eternally, if necessary, to show my gratitude for their service to the lotus feet of Srila Guru Maharaj. So in the words of Jamuna Acharya, Prapanna Jivanamritam, but what is it, Stotra Ratna? He says, when will I realize that I have such a wonderful divine master and offer myself to him an eternal service? Sometimes Gurudev would say, one word from Srila Guru Maharaj is sufficient to make us his slaves forever. What type of devotion is that? He's saying, one word from Guru Maharaj is sufficient to make us his slave eternally. And actually, as with everything he says, if you look into this, you'll find slokas in the Vedas and stuff that will verify the truth of this statement. But there, it may appear to you like something written in a book, in a scripture, whatever. Here is someone expressing it from the heart, who's realized that, who lives it, who personifies it. So he personified devotion to the lotus feet of Srila, of Sri Guru. The things we read about, the things we sing about, or what we might dream about, he personified that. What is it? Narada? Guru Bhaktya Purusho Yanjaso Jayet. The sloka. Many things can be said, many things are said, described, alluded to. Same, but if you have Guru Bhakti, devotion to the lotus feet of Guru, you get everything. So sometimes, in his final days, he'd be relishing different slokas and things, and such a degree of happiness or ecstasy would come to him, and he would say, I don't know why this is happening, very innocently and naively. He'd say, why is all this coming to me now? Yeah, it was the cumulative effect of his unalloyed service and devotion to the lotus feet of Srila Guru Maharaj. So one of the final things he said about everyone else, how he viewed everyone, sometimes he would look at all of the disciples, his disciples, and say, you're all gifts of Srila Guru Maharaj. That's how he saw it. And we had heard, a Mahabhagavata guru doesn't see anyone as a disciple. They see everyone as vaibhava, or extension of their own guru. So I remember the veranda went filled with so many devotees. And when he left, he looked, turned to me and said, Maharaj, they're all gifts from Srila Guru Maharaj. He's not thinking they're his. No, it's Guru Maharaj. So, and the final times, one of the things he said, in a very affectionate mood for all his followers, he said, everyone has some fault. He said, big or small, that is not the question. He said, but if they have a devotional mood, devotional spirit, he said, that has to be recognized and respected. But this was a very beautiful thing to say, saying you can look at anyone if you want and find some fault there, a flaw. He said, but what I'm seeing is their devotional mood and tendency, their devotional spirit. And that's what you should recognize and respect. So we know, we see like hovering above his head, the sloka, Trinadapi suni chena tororapi sahishnuna amani na manadena kirtiniya sadahri. 1,000 times we heard him say, you must be humble, you must be tolerant and give honor to others. Which he once condensed even further in a sense by saying, my religion is finding fault with myself, not with others. Which is Guru Maharaj saying, that's the real message of Gita, further developed in the Bhagavatam. So once I said to him, I said, Maharaj, when did you realize this? You're always telling the Trinadapi Suni Chena Sloka, be humble, tolerant, honor others. And he shook his head. He said, out of desperation. He said, nothing else works. He said, that's how I came to embrace that. You can try so many things, try to make so many adjustments, try to harmonize so many egos, try to accommodate and digest so many things. He said, at last, out of desperation, you will take shelter of this sloka, this teaching of Mahaprabhu, to be humble, tolerant, and give honor to others. And then, and what Guru Maharaj would say, adding to that, then kirtaniya sadahari, then you can go on with Krishna consciousness, the Sankirtan movement, preaching, all these things. But those three things have to be there. So when it came time to arrange his samadhi, we knew this sloka has to be very prominent in placement. So many slokas were selected on the basis of his expressed appreciation, but that one was given like the central position. So that's what I want to say for this point. And I would like that if Paramananda Prabhu, if you'll say a little bit about Srila Gurudev's pastimes in Thailand, because we're here. And
Goswami Maharaj just mentioned about the simplicity, simple-heartedness of the Vaishnava as one of the qualities of the pure devotee. And Gurudev, well, it wasn't always a captain, but we're talking about the simplicity of the way.
Yes.
And Gurudev was a perfect example of that. And I remember, I recalled some of the pastimes that happened. And one time, I received these reports of one lady like continuously coming and asking for Srila Gurudev, a Thai lady, right?
Yeah.
And every time she would come, we're somewhere else with Gurudev. Hospital or went somewhere. Anyway, she was trying for a week and then Srila would have left. It's towards the end of his last visit. And then what happened is, she explained that one time Srila would take his morning walks. 6, 7 o'clock, he would come down every day, go on a walk with some group of disciples. And she was just passing by in the car. And then, by some reason, Gurudev just looked at her and waved to her. Beautiful, he described this beautiful smile, he waved to me. And when I get home, I just couldn't get rid of this. You know, I just forget about it. So I came the next day and asked, who is that person?
Uh-huh.
And some devotees explained, oh, he's in this guru, he came from India. And she asked, so what it's all about? And she teach her how to chant. She started reading some books, she started chanting a little bit, and she kept coming like for a week. By some mystical arrangement, Gurudev wasn't there.
Oh,
she kept coming. Right. But anyway, this just this small interaction, Gurudev passing by on his scooter, smiling and waving to that lady and the guy who's like driving. That interaction, like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have this Mahatma Mahaprabhu who says that the highest devotee is the one who can, just by his presence, he can inspire people to practice Krishna consciousness, to chant.
Krishna consciousness descends within them.
Right.
Yeah.
So here we can see a clear illustration of that. And also the other day, some monks were having the annual prayers over there. And there was one monk who met Srila Gurudev in his past visits, the younger monk and lots of senior monks sitting at the end of the line. And then we came over and then he saw me and he's like talking to other monks and saying, you know, that man, his teacher is here. I can hear he's speaking in Thai.
Yeah.
And when I met him for the first time, I just couldn't forget. I think he's the most beautiful person in the world. Like, 2 years passed since I met him for the first time, I still remember. Let's see him. And all the senior monks are saying, no, this is not according to the rules. We have to finish the prayer. Go back to the temple. The left and right. But somehow he managed to convince them. There are eight of them. Remember?
Yes. Right.
And while we're walking, he's like describing the qualities of Gurudev based on a very short meeting.
Yeah.
During his Gurudev's visit to his temple. That's a very short interaction. It's a very sweet one. And then all the monks suddenly coming into his room. Gurudev's like, wow.
Yeah.
I'm saying Gurudev's sannyasis, the Thai sannyasis are coming in. Really? And there are quite a few of them. And I remember he sent her, call Goswami Maharaj.
Yes.
In the room, and all came
I want you to know, there's all these Thai monks sitting on the mat.
And that particular monk, we had some experience with Srila Gurudev in the past, he's like trying to present Srila Gurudev. And at some point there, and you know, in his very natural, sweet way, Gurudev is making them comfortable, serving some water, asking how are they doing, how's their family doing, although he's not supposed to ask. In Indian hospitality style, usually.
Yeah.
And you can see they were like captured. They were already captured, but they're kind of bewildered. It's so simple. He's sitting here in a very simple environment. There's not so much going on around him. How come he's this, you know, a very big, like in Thai, it sounds Keshi Achan, like the Maha Acharya, the Jagat Guru.
Right.
How come he's, you know, that personality? The young man is talking about.
Yeah.
And one of them was asking, like, well, you know, how many temples you got? And Srila Gurudev would ask her, well, here we have just this place, and also we have an India. Around the world we have more than 100. And when they hear this number, 100, I mean, the chief monk of that particular, he's just got one temple.
Yeah. Right.
I got to say, in such a humble way, just mention more than 100. And at that time, they all like went down and kind of offered the obeisances in mind.
Uh-huh.
And I remember later, a month later after that meeting, a year later after that meeting, again, you were in the car, Gurudev was in the car.
Yeah.
You went to the same temple.
Oh, yes.
But he wouldn't like get out of the car because he wasn't feeling well.
Yes.
And then the monks spotted us. All of them, the whole temple emptied, they just came right into the car. Right there. Maharaj was there. I still got a picture of it.
Yes.
And after we came back, I was very happy with it. I saw an old friend and very happy with this trip.
Very for sure.
Was saying that. Also on account of manga loving.
Yeah.
I remember one time we came to Calcutta with Shripad Vaishnava Maharaj. And that was a manga season. And normally, not so many people were there, it's a hot season.
Yeah.
And then Sandeep Prabhu, he sent some Alfonso mangoes, like the best mangoes you can get.
From Bombay.
Yes. And we came to Gurudev Jirande, he's having his mango, he offered us some. He started talking about mangoes. He kept talking for maybe an hour. And he would describe the qualities of different mangoes. Like Maharaj mentioned, there were like more than 100 of them.
Yeah.
Because endless talk, you would recall
the name, tell you the name of each one, its qualities,
the qualities, how tasty, and the way he was explaining it, the taste of the nuggets? Or like sitting there, we're salivating. It's so intense and so real that we could feel it. Right. And then at the end of this explanation, mango samhita,
yeah.
He says, but the Thai mangoes, those are transcendental mangoes. They're beyond the mind. And Prabhu, did you bring some this time? Uh-huh. That was like the first day I arrived. So I said, yes.
Yeah.
I'll always bring some mangoes for him.
There'd be a lot of Thai mangoes would come.
Right. And even when he stopped taking the mangoes, he would still put them.
Oh, because of the sugar content. Yeah.
And he would give them to some VIP guests or some VIP devotees who would visit me.
Yeah.
And there's so many other aspects.
Yeah.
Whatever. Maharaj says so many beautiful things about Gurudev, and whatever we're trying to say is just a drop of unlimited glories of Srila Gurudev.
Yes, definitely. Jai Srila Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Rasthira Bha Mahabhahotsavati Tihi Jai.